You've likely heard the familiar phrase, there's nothing new under the sun. Well, it comes from Ecclesiastes, an Old Testament book containing the confessions of an ancient king. Solomon, we're learning, had everything the world had to offer. And yet his unbridled pursuit of happiness yielded far less than he hoped for. Today on Insight for Living, you'll hear Chuck Swindoll echo these words of Solomon, that indeed there is nothing new under the sun. Solomon's relentless chase after lasting satisfaction is eerily similar to pursuits in our own generation. Chuck titled today's message, based on Ecclesiastes 2, More Miles of Bad Road.
Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes tells the truth. He tells the truth about chiefs as well as those who serve the chief. He tells the truth about kings and paupers, men and women, young and old. He tells the truth about slaves and free men. He tells the truth about life. He was able to do that. He had the position, he had the money, and he had the time it took to pursue what life was all about. And according to verse 13 of the first chapter, he confesses that he set his mind to seek and explore all that had been done under heaven. His pursuit was a horizontal pursuit. He was determined not to get beyond the sun or above the heavens, but to stay on this earth and to find out what he could about life and to find anything that would satisfy. He tried intellectualism in the latter part of chapter 1. He then turned to pleasure and laughter, and it fell flat. Later into chapter 2, he tried wine and women. He tried architecture and agriculture. Remember in our last study? He built parks, and he dug pools, and he planted trees, and he tried projects that affected the landscape of his nation. Nothing satisfied. He then turned to slaves, men and women, born within his own household as well as those that he would buy from outer nations. He listened to the songs of the singers. He collected precious metals and gems. He even went on all kinds of wild sexual escapades. He brought into his harem 1,000 women to see if that would satisfy. None of it satisfied. Verse 10 of chapter 2, he confesses, all that my eyes desired, I didn't refuse them. I tried it all. I held nothing back. My pleasures were there. My heart was not withheld from any pleasure. It was pleased because of all my labor, and that was my reward. The momentary smile of ecstasy was the ultimate limit of my satisfaction. And then I returned to boredom. Then I looked for another bright light on the horizon. No profit under the sun, verse 11 concludes. Well, there's another direction I should go. In fact, the way verse 12 of chapter 2 begins suggests a change in direction. So I turned. I came to a fork in the road, and I decided I would turn this direction, and I would pursue a number of comparisons. Beginning in this 12th verse, he comes to the first comparison. I determined whether I would be a man of wisdom or a man of folly. Verse 12, I considered wisdom against madness and folly. For what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done? It's another way of saying, I'm the king, and I have the time and money and the skills and the wisdom to find out the answers. And who could find out more than I after me? He comes to the conclusion in verse 13 that it's better to live wisely than foolishly. See the way it reads? I saw that wisdom excels folly as much as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool, he walks in darkness. His eyes are closed. It's better to have your eyes open than to have your eyes closed. And yet I know that one fate befalls them both. Isn't that interesting? When I look at the foolish compared to the wise, and I choose wisdom, suddenly I'm to another impasse, because death impacts both. Verse 15, I said to myself, as is the fate of the fool, it will also befall me. I, the wisest of the wise. Why then have I been extremely wise? I think this is the way a person feels who has recently graduated from the university and cannot find a job. What use are all these degrees? What's the meaning of it all? Why have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, this is vanity. It's an empty dream, this pursuit of intelligence. Verse 16, there's no lasting remembrance of the wise man, as is true of the fool. Inasmuch as in the coming days all will be forgotten. Oh, we try to keep that from happening. We don't build our tombstones out of cardboard. We build them out of granite. We don't paste names on them that are out of masking tape. We etch the names into the granite. And we dare the sands of time and the winds of time to beat upon that slate and to wear it thin, because these are our loved ones and we never want them forgotten. But all tombstones finally wear down to thin pieces of slate and fall. I've seen them strewn across New England, and so have you. Verse 16 concludes how the wise man and the fool alike die. Look at the next phrase. So I hated life. I look at all of the labor, all of the projects, all of the little hobbies, all of the plans, all of the hours, all of the years, and I saw it all blowing into the dust of tomorrow and all being forgotten, and I hated it. For the work which had been done under the sun, there's that phrase again, under the sun, was grievous to me, because everything is futility and striving after wind. Well, maybe that perspective of Solomon could be enhanced if he would consider the possibility of leaving his fortune to his children. Maybe the answer is not now, but later. Maybe that's where the pleasure comes in. Keep reading. I hated all the fruit of my labor, for which I had labored under the sun. Why, Solomon? Because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool? Yet he will have control over all the fruit of my labor, for which I have labored by acting wisely under the sun. It's emptiness. It's futility. Therefore, I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun. 21 is, well, it's so real you can't believe it. When there is a man who has labored with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, then he gives his legacy to one who has not labored with them. This is vanity and a great evil. Work, work, work. Think, compete, strategize, plan, sacrifice, worry, skip vacations, add hours, add jobs, travel, scratch the right backs, invest, save, risk, work, work, and then when it's all in place, death comes. Or worse, you live to see your kids make a mess of it. It's better to die than to live and see that. Dennis Barnhart was president of Eagle Computer Incorporated. His life is a study in tragedy. His firm grew He finally decided that they should go public. 40-year-old man, as a result of this first public stock offering, suddenly became a multimillionaire. And then, for some strange reason, while he was in his red Ferrari, only blocks from the headquarters of Eagle Computer Incorporated, he drove his car through 20 feet of guardrail into a ravine and died. The article reads, "Until the accident at 4:30 Wednesday afternoon, it had been the best of days for Barnhart and the thriving young company, which makes small business and personal computers. Eagle netted $37 million from the initial offering of 2.75 million shares. After describing the stock, it says, that made Barnhart's ownership of 592,000 shares worth more than $9 million. And that afternoon, he died in an auto accident. What of your kingdom? What of your empire? What of your plans, businessman or couple or career woman? Dreams, of course, that's what keeps you going. Hope, plans, you're working on them now. You work on them on your vacation. Put vacation in quotes. In your, quote, spare time, you're thinking of them. But you know, it seems terribly irrelevant since you'll be reduced to death in only a matter of time, some of you less than a decade, some of you in less than a year. Derek Kidner says, if every card in our hand will be trumped, does it really matter how we play? God holds the trump card. It's called death. Euripides, the poet, says, death is the debt we all must pay. And rich and poor, young and old, king and pauper alike are now in the grave. And so it will continue to be. An hour later, if I read this passage correctly, 18 through 21 talk about the legacy of a man who has been successful. He's got a family of sons and daughters, maybe only one son. And I do not care how capable, how competent, how perfectly fitted that daughter or son or both may be for your work. There's something in you they don't have. You dreamed it up. You were the pioneer. You hammered it out on the anvil of time. When you had nothing, you came to something. And no matter how hard you've had them work alongside, there's something they do not have that you've got. Part of what they get free. And when you get something for nothing, it breeds irresponsibility. And if not in that generation, you can count on it in your grandchildren, it'll happen. Not even that satisfies. He says it with a sigh. He sandwiches it between the words, despaired of all the fruit of my labor, verse 20, and what does a man get in all his labor and in his striving with which he labors under the sun, verse 22, nothing. Newsweek magazine, some time back, included the story of a West German industrialist named Friedrich Flick. He died and left a personal fortune estimated at $1.5 billion, if you can imagine, a business empire that embraced all or part of some 300 firms and a reputation as perhaps the crustiest and craftiest magnate ever to operate on the German business scene. Flick was dedicated wholly to his work. As a matter of fact, he buried his wife at 3 p.m. one day in 1966, and 2 hours later he was back at his desk, working late into the evening. At his death, the Flick empire generated annual sales in excess of $3 billion. That's every year in West Germany. But for all his enormous power and wealth, the old man had one very human shortcoming. He could not control his family. By last week, according to the article, a Flick family fight over the empire had employees, bankers, and politicians alike shuddering over the eventual impact it might have on the West German economy. As one man put it, Flick scored at the office but struck out at home. See, the price you pay for building an empire, friend, is that you build the empire and you don't build into your family. But when it's all said and done, the empire must be turned over to the very ones you haven't prepared for such requirements and assignments. Solomon throws up his hands and says, it isn't worth it. So now he thinks, well, maybe the answer is getting relief in the evening. If I work very hard in the day, then I take time off in the evening to build into my family, to do the things that will prepare them to handle the empire. Look at the next verse. Hang on. Verse 22. What does a man get in all his labor and in his striving with which he labors under the sun? An evening's rest? No, keep reading. Because all his days, his task is painful and grievous. And at night, his mind does not rest. This too is vanity. Isn't that the truth? How many entrepreneurs do you know who are not, if not into, almost into a tranquilizer to keep going? Who knows how many people live their lives through the year with numerous pills? Do you rest at night? Do you rest really well? You know, I confess to you, we were gone this past week up to Forest Home with so many from our church. Had just a delightful time of rest from Wednesday on. But until Wednesday, I was still going through the schedule back home. I thought to myself, right about now the mail comes. Going to be answering the mail. Going to get such and such done. Right now, such and such is happening. This is going on. Don't look at me like that. You do the very same thing when you're up there. It takes you about 3 days to get into it. You know what changed my whole perspective? 12 high schoolers teamed up on me and fully clothed threw me in the lake. Don't clap. Those kids will do it again. I felt like a mummy up in their arms. And I thought, well, if you can't fight it, you might as well enjoy it. And I took my watch off, took my glass off. They threw me in that icy lake. One of those little snots said to me when I was getting up out of the lake, you better keep your stuff together because I'm going for your job in a few years. Can you believe it say that to me? Right then I felt like saying, you can have my job. I'd rather be in this lake right now, as a matter of fact. And that kind of broke the thing from the past several hours when we were up there. I was up there to rest. We were all up there to take it easy, to enjoy one another. Some people paid good money to rest. And unless I miss my guess, they brought all kinds of homework from the work to do while they're there. Not even at rest, not even in the evening, do we put our minds in neutral. You know what was in Solomon's mind? His son. Rehoboam. Rehoboam, what a tragic man. After four decades of peace, Solomon hands over this kingdom to his son. And Rehoboam takes the kingdom from his father, and he has within his ability to listen to wise counselors or foolish ones, to listen to the seasoned men of God who will warn him, or to listen to the young upstarts who cared nothing about God. And he chose the latter. Within a matter of time, hardly a year's time, the country was in civil war. Egypt came in, seeing this to be nothing more than a weak puppet of a nation in a matter of time. And Rehoboam held him off. You know what he did? He went to the temple, Solomon's temple. He took the solid shields of gold and he paid off the Egyptians to keep from invading by filling their coffers with Israeli gold that Solomon had put in the temple. And according to 2 Chronicles chapter 12, he substituted shields of brass for shields of gold. And I'm sure he shined them up to make them look just like gold. But they were brass. Who knows but what Solomon wasn't looking prophetically into the life of his own unprepared son and saying, not even when I spend an evening at rest do I see the possibility of hope in him. So what do I do? How can I make it? Since it's all vanity and you've heard it enough to have your lips move every time I read that in the passage, Solomon gets a flash of insight. It's rare, and it comes suddenly in the heels of chapter 2. Look at it. There is nothing. Well, I've got to alter the rendering because in the Hebrew, the words better for do not appear. So for some reason it got into this text. It reads like this. There is nothing in a man to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. That's the first flash of insight. There is nothing inherent in man or in humanity that makes it possible for humanity to extract enjoyment and purpose from the things that we do. That's his first insight. He said, I've seen this because it comes from the hand of God. God has served on a silver platter a piece of information to me in my pursuits. And I'm already ready to tell you, this is true. There is nothing within you or your children, innately, there's nothing there that will automatically keep them at peace and full of joy. Well, you know how quickly a child gets bored. You know what it takes to satisfy a teenager, or maybe no one knows what it takes to satisfy a teenager. You know how it is as a young adult. You know how it is as a young couple who just gotten married. There's always more, always something else, always something else, some curious something, some necessary comfort, some addition that you've got to have, and it's constantly at work. When you say, I'm going to put all of that aside and live with life as it is, you become bored. Solomon has, from the hand of God, the truth concerning this insight into humanity.
You're listening to Insight for Living, and a message from Chuck Swindoll titled, More Miles of Bad Road. And please stay with us to hear Chuck's closing comments. Now, it's not too early to pre-order your copy of this comprehensive 24-part classic series. Just go online to insightworld.org, where you'll find the title, Living on the Ragged Edge. Well, you still have a few weeks remaining in your summer schedule before the busy school year and the fall season kicks in. And if you received Chuck's letter this month, you know that he'd like to add an important book to your reading list. On this final program in August, it's our last occasion to tell you about Jerry Bridges' book, The Pursuit of Holiness.
I love the metaphor Jerry Bridges used to describe a profound spiritual principle. He wrote this, just as the farmer plows his field, plants the seeds, and waters his crop, he knows he cannot cause the seed to germinate, nor can he produce the rain and sunshine to yield results. You understand that farming is a joint venture between God and the farmer. The farmer cannot do what God alone must do. At the same time, God will not do what the farmer should do. When we hear God say these words, "Be holy, for I am holy," we know that this impossible standard requires a relationship of cooperation. God has made it possible for us to walk in holiness. At the same time, He has given to us the responsibility of doing the walking. That's what Jerry Bridges' book is all about. Here at Insight for Living, we're extremely cautious. I would say we're even fussy about the materials we offer to you. We're very choosy. Resources must be theologically sound in order to make our short list of recommendations. They also must be readable. And we know that a book must be worthy of the time that you and others will invest reading it. And so without reservation and with hearty enthusiasm, I highly recommend this book to you. Get your copy today. I so want you to read The Pursuit of Holiness by Jerry Bridges.
And the book is yours when you give a donation of any amount. So request a copy in a letter addressed to Insight for Living, Box 269,000, Plano, Texas, 75026. Or if you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. And online, go to insight.org. That's the classic book from trusted author Jerry Bridges called The Pursuit of Holiness. This ministry is entirely dependent on the faithful donations from loyal friends who share a passion for God's Word and want to see Chuck's teaching continue. Thank you for your donation today. And when you give, be sure to mention the book Chuck described, The Pursuit of Holiness. This is the very last day we'll mention this special time-limited offer. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. And by the way, Insight for Living is concluding its online summer CD sale tomorrow. While you have a little extra leisure time this weekend, we invite you to browse the store and take advantage of reduced pricing on sermon series before the summer sale concludes Saturday night at midnight. And while you're visiting our newly designed website, be sure to notice the library of articles from Chuck and, of course, the free daily devotionals. Go to insight.org. I'm Dave Spiker, inviting you to join us again Monday when Chuck Swindoll's series Living on the Ragged Edge continues on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, More Miles of Bad Road, was copyrighted in 1983, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2013 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.